Support for Native American Public Telecommunications comes from the Ford Foundation on the web at fordfound.org.
This is Ben Kramer, production assistant from NAPT in Lincoln, Nebraska. Thanks for tuning in to the Aros Native Sounds Artist Profile. Arville Bird, Paiute Métis, is an award-winning classically trained violinist and Native American flutist. His music is built upon an eclectic fusion of styles, including classical, Celtic, jazz, bluegrass, and country. He has performed around the world and was named Artist of the Year in 2007 at the Native American Music Awards. NAPT Interactive Media Specialist Eric Martin speaks with Bird about his unique style of music and Native heritage.
In the language of the Southern Paiutes, I've said, "Hello, Indian people. How are you? Thank you for listening. Sit closer."
You're Métis and Paiute, correct?
Yes, I am Métis of Southern Paiute on my mother's side, who comes from the Shi'vwit Paiute band of the Southern Paiutes of Utah. And then on my father's side, my ancestors go back to the Scottish Highlands, the County Ayr, and the Clan Kennedy. I'm really tribal on both sides because the Clan Society was a tribal society. Southern Paiutes were, of course, tribal. I was actually born in Idaho and raised in Utah as well as Arizona, so I was raised off the reservation. My grandmother on my mother's side was actually adopted or traded for a horse and buggy in the 1880s because her parents had both died, and so she was raised by a Mormon family in St. George, Utah. So she was raised away from her culture, away from her traditions, and was totally assimilated into the Mormon culture and the white society, which then made my mother a half-breed in a society that looked at the Indian people as being the fallen brethren, so they weren't quite equal. So she experienced a lot of prejudice and difficulty as a child growing up, not accepted by the tribal people and not accepted by the white society either. So she grew up resenting her heritage and wanting to be what they called white and delightsome in the south of southern Utah. So she grew up with a lot of anger, resentment, and prejudice. And it hasn't been until just recently, since I've been walking the red road and pursuing my heritage and my knowledge and understanding of it and my identity with it, that she has actually softened and become proud of her heritage. She used to resent being asked, you know, what her native heritage was. And now she has openly expressed the sentiment, "It's good to be among my people."
Have you gone back to the reservation and met some of your extended family?
Yes, I have. I try to get there every year, but I missed this year when we were down at the Zion Flute Festival. But the last couple of years, I've been going to the Shi'vwit Reservation and meeting with cousins of mine that are on the Shi'vwit side. They help me kind of try to find my roots, my relations through my genealogy. Although my great-grandfather, who I know his name is Jack Bobbiequeets, and my great-grandmother, who was known as Tsnunk, or her English name as Annie, both died before the first census of 1890. So their names never made it to the roll. But the more I found out about the Southern Paiutes, the more affinity I have for them, the more identity I feel towards them, the more I personally identify with them in particular.
Of course, you started out speaking the Paiute language in this interview. And so are you fluent in the language? How did you learn it? And how much do you know?
I don't know a whole lot. What I've learned has been through talking to the elders and some of the full-bloods that are from not only the Shi'vwits, but the Kaibab Indian reservations in northern Arizona. And they've helped me with the pronunciation. And then there is books that have some of the language in it, although the pronunciation is hard to come by because there's some guides, but you don't really know what it sounded like. There's very few people that speak the language, and they haven't really made an effort to revive the language or teach the language. I've heard of a language disc, but they don't make it available. They guard it for whatever reasons. There's been a recent revival in the last 10 years of the salt songs of the Southern Paiutes, which is, I think, a tremendous bit of their heritage to come back. Salt songs were actually songs that were sung by the Chemehuevi and the Southern Paiutes as they traveled along the trails of the Colorado River, and they would sing these songs to know their location. Well, these songs were essentially lost and then brought back by some of the elders at Kaibab and Shi'vwits, and they are now being used in death ceremony, and it takes 12 hours to sing these songs. and they sing them all night long. And it's to help the spirit cross over into the spirit world. A lot of the culture has been lost, of course, and some of it is being revived and coming back, but it's very slow. And one of the Kaibab Paiutes I talked to a couple of years ago told me that the medicine of the Southern Paiutes is just hanging by a thread. There's only a couple of elders that still have some of that medicine, and they're reluctant to pass it on because they don't see anyone worthy to pass it on to. So it's a shame. So the language that I've learned has been enough to introduce myself and to honor the language and honor the Southern Paiutes.
With your music, you're able to do something that a lot of people aren't able to do. You're able to not only have beautiful fiddle music in the sort of traditional sort of sense of the word fiddle, but also incredible symphonic violin playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up playing the violin, so I know that's difficult. It's not an easy thing to do.
Oh, it sure is. I struggled with it, too.
You know, and a lot of people can't do both. And I wonder, when did you start to learn violin?
I started right from the beginning learning violin. When I was 9 years old, I picked up the violin we had in our family, and I wanted to play an instrument. I really wanted to play the trumpet, but we didn't have a trumpet. We had a violin, so that's what I picked up. And my parents were good enough to find me an instructor at the age of 9 in Salt Lake City, and she was good enough to see something in me that she felt deserved to be nurtured. And I began my journey with the violin and with music. It's a journey that's really become a way of life. Everything that I've ever wanted has come through music, has come through the violin, and it's been a spiritual path of healing. Music is a powerful healing tool, and the violin is a powerful healing instrument. An instrument like the Native American flute that resonates in the heart chakra. So it's definitely a healing instrument for the emotions. So it's been a wonderful experience. I studied classical music, and I always felt inadequate. I never felt good enough. I carried that baggage for a long time. I got a scholarship to Arizona State University, but they made me feel like I wasn't good enough to be a performer. They wanted me to be a teacher. I was deflated by that, but then later became angry enough to leave Arizona and seek private instruction with a Hungarian master teacher in Illinois. And he was brilliant and basically took me apart as a player and built me up from the ground up. And within a year, I had the confidence and the stability to know that I knew how to play this instrument and know that I could play whatever I wanted to play. But at the same time, I realized, well, I don't know what music is. I've just been focusing on playing this instrument so much that I really don't know what music is. So I quit taking lessons, I quit reading music, and I started to play by ear and to improvise and to let the music of the creator of the universe come through me and to manifest some of the new music that came from those early years. Bridges the genres of classical, Celtic, old-time mountain music, and folk music. So my playing has evolved over the years. When I switched over from classical music to Celtic and mountain music and that, I had to unlearn some of the stuff I had learned as a classical player to make it sound authentic, because I don't think there's anything worse than listening to a classical player try to play bluegrass music or jazz because they're so stiff.
And that actually goes to what I was talking about because, you know, I've talked to people that have tried to unlearn those things,
You
said,
uh-huh.
And they just can't. So it's to your credit that you're able to do that.
Well, thank you.
Now, I mean, you talked about your Métis heritage. You talked about your Scottish heritage.
Mm-hmm.
In both of those, there is a fiddle tradition.
Oh, yeah.
And is that what drew you in to try to learn how to play the fiddle, or was it something else?
It was really something else. At the time, you know, I wasn't really aware of my Scottish heritage or of Métis fiddling, which is the Aboriginal tribe of people that live in Canada and play fiddle tunes that they've learned hundreds of years ago. But it was seeing a fiddle player play without music and play with such passion and such feeling that it excited a crowd and connected with the crowd to move them to dance, to clap, to tap their feet, to really enjoy it. As a classical musician, you know, I was part of a section. I was part of an orchestra. I was part of a institutionalized organization that had its rules and regulations, and you had to fit in and play those and play like everybody else. So to see one guy without music performing such moving music drew me to it. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to have that freedom, have that expression, and have that rapport myself with an audience. Classical music gave me discipline and practice structure. I've always loved to practice more than I've loved to perform, but I've seen that performance is necessary to communicate and to make a living at what I do, what I love to do.
What would you call your music?
It's really a multi-genre, multicultural music. We've had trouble categorizing it ourselves. It's not really a jazz music. It's kind of a fusion music. A friend of mine, Will Klipman, who's a renowned percussionist, came up with the title of Global Native Fusion because it is a global music. You'll hear tribal influences from around the world. You'll hear the fusion of classical and Celtic. You'll hear multicultural and multi-genre fusion. So I think that's probably what we're going to stick with because it best describes what I do, I think.
What are your favorite songs?
You mean from what I perform or in general?
If you want to talk about your influences, that'd be great. But I was actually looking more for your particular songs.
Let me talk about my influences. First of all, the composers that I most enjoyed either listening to or performing were Dvorak, were Debussy, and Bach, Beethoven to a certain degree. But then when I switched and I began to listen to more popular influences at the time, I began to hear violin in popular music like It's a Beautiful Day, Jean-Luc Ponty, and then Doug Kershaw. Later on, Charlie Daniels became one of my heroes, not because he was a great fiddle player, but because he was doing what I wanted to be doing. So he was an inspiration to me back in the early 80s. And then there's so many good fiddlers like Kenny Baker and Bobby Hicks that I listen to a lot. Mark O'Connor has always been a huge inspiration to me. Sam Bush is another, and Tim O'Brien are both contemporary influences of mine. As far as my stuff that I like to play the most probably is music from animal totems like the turtle, the bear, the horse, the red tail, the wolf, the puma, the buffalo. These animals, the compositions I've written for these or co-written for these animals are some of my favorite ones to play. But in recent years, I've become an aficionado of the Native American flute. So the Animal Totems 2 CD, which has more flute on it, are some of my favorite songs, too, to play because I branch into genres with the Native American flute, like blues shuffle, Latin-flavored music, and the coyote or the badger from those CDs are favorites of mine, plus the more cinematic versions of the dolphin dances, the osprey, and a 6/8 number that is on the same CD about the cinematic version of Great Blue Heron and Dragonfly. These both have Celtic influences and use the flute. And both those cultures are so compatible. They both honored the drum and the flute. The Celts used the fiddle because the bagpipe was banned, so they transferred their bagpipe tunes to the fiddle, and they brought their fiddle over to the Americas and introduced it to the native people there. And they both had warrior societies. They both had nature-based religions. They were both persecuted by the dominant societies. They were both seen as the dark threat, the wild ones. But their cultures, being tribal cultures, were centered around kinship and loyalty, and they were fiercely defended. And I have a lot of respect for both of those types of cultures.
For more information about Arvil Bird and to purchase his music, visit his website at arvilbird.com. That's ARVELBIRD.com.
I will not forget the stories which shaped our way of life.
The stories of who we are.
I can tell you about this place we still call home.
And I can tell you about the new stories to come.
When you participate in the 2010 census,
you ensure programs and services to be here for our community.
And you can help continue our stories.
Look for the census form in March.
2010 census. It's in our hands. Visit 2010census.gov. Paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.